It's spoiler in time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tom Merritt. Today we are going to spoiler in reverse order: Hacking the System, Walking Dead, Marco Polo, The Shield, Better Call Saul, and Brian's Here.
Yeah. Hi. Speaking of which, that we're gonna have to move fast this time, Tom. No, we can't get lost in a memory hole. We gotta plow through these. We need the help of I almost said Ewan McGregor, which would have been awesome.
But sadly he was unavailable.
He may add more than me.
Yeah. Ewan, thank you so much. Ewan Rankin from British what are all the shows you do again?
Oh, Christ. BritishTechNetwork.com, and it's Max Show, Big Show, and a load of others. And House of Cards and Drone, and yeah. And the news show, Daily News Show, which is 5 minutes, which is excellent with Carl Swagger.
Dude, that's great. All right, man.
BritishTechNetwork.com. Ewan's going to hang around. Ewan, you can hang around as long as you want, but he's going to join us to spoil our first episode for sure. Better Call Saul, Episode 2, Brian, in which we basically make a complete episode out of the first two.
Boy, it was really weird only watching the first episode and hearing people sing the praises of Better Call Saul, because I was like, that doesn't seem like a show that deserves as much praise as everyone's giving it. And then I saw the second episode and realized that it is a complete arc. It is a complete story. That moment when you see in the desert the genesis, the little piece of bacteria around which nucleates the beautiful snowflake that is Saul Goodman, is amazing. And you realize, like, when he walks away and stops and turns back and does the dumbest thing possible and try to talk sense into Tuco and starts negotiating for the lives of the as he puts it, those two knuckleheads, it was a great. I was like in.
The one thing that I took away from that whole scenario, which I think speaks to the fact that they have done a lot of legwork on this post Breaking Bad, was that I suddenly understood Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad much better. I understood why he was even willing to help Walter White as much as he did, because who Jimmy is somebody who would like to take the shortcut to riches, but has just too much ethics to do the really nasty things he has to do, whether they're illegal or not. He doesn't want to play the game that the partners at the big company that his brother was part of play. He doesn't want to do that. He's got too much ethics for that. And he cares about people, but he doesn't have too much ethics to, like, cut some corners here and there and, you know, to play the slipping Jimmy game. And that's exactly what you're talking about out in the desert. You see both sides of Jimmy there. And like you say, you see what is going to become Saul Goodman. Like, he pleads a case. He shows his natural talent to be a lawyer right there.
That's amazing. I hadn't put that together, that I always, like, in my brain category, Saul Goodman was always like, oh, slimy lawyer. And then it's like, no, the real slimy lawyers are, as you say, that's everyone else at the firm genuinely screwing his brother out of his fair share. I hadn't put that together. Like, weirdly, this is a more ethical guy. I want to know what Ewan thinks. What do you say?
I think I want to pick on a point that you guys came out with last time. And I read when Breaking Bad had hit sort of season two, I read an interview with Gilligan, and he said, I wanted to do the opposite in this. I wanted to take, soap operas rely on stable characters to keep the longevity of the thing running, and I wanted to change those characters as they went through. And I think nearly all the characters changed during Breaking Bad, including Walt's family. But what I'm kind of struggling with is the fact that everyone is who they are in Breaking Bad in this. There is no evolution of them, and I think Saul's who Saul always was. I agree with Tom there. I think he never sat comfortably with any of the violence. You know, he was a bit of a pussy himself in Breaking Bad. But there isn't the character evolution was what carried it for me in Breaking Bad. And I don't think they've got that at this point. There's new characters coming in, like Tuco's kind of intelligent half. I can't even remember his name. You mentioned him earlier on, Brian.
Nacho, but, yeah.
Yeah, but Breaking Bad was a tough watch for season one. You're sitting there going, okay, yeah, but come on, you know, go somewhere. And then two, it was like, okay, I get you. And it really started to flow then. And I don't know if they're going to do the same with this, but I agree with Brian. You know, season one, episode one and episode two, at the end of episode two, I was kind of like, okay, but you're going to have to do a little bit much than fill in the holes for up to the start of Walt losing it.
Well, let me make a pitch for it. There are different ways you could take away the experience of Breaking Bad. One of the ways I take away from it is that you are watching at the beginning, a sympathetic, disenfranchised character who is powerless. He's got nothing, and you want him to do better. And you end with a completely unsympathetic monster who you are just ready to see him get his just comeuppance or whatever. Likewise, I do feel like, again, whether or not it's a likable person or not, I think we are seeing the weakest point in Jimmy McGill's story. And over the course of this, we will see him become powerful. Because keep in mind, by the time we meet him in Breaking Bad, we get the impression that this guy's been around and been an institution around these parts. So there may be a point where Saul Goodman is genuinely much more powerful than we see him before he becomes kind of the cartoonish buffoon that he's become, you know, at the end of, or by the time we see him in Breaking Bad. So we could see a massive arc upward. And then down to before we get to the Breaking Bad story. So the journey could be not so much a moral one, so much as one of somebody who is powerless to becoming powerful.
I would almost say you're looking at the first half of a bell curve, right? With Walter White, it's a fall story, right? It's like he went from being, I guess you could look at it as a rise story, but there's a sort of a linear progression. Whereas we know that Saul Goodman's story, if we've watched Breaking Bad, we know how it ends, right? But I love the point that Brian just brought up. I hadn't thought about that. We may have not seen the peak of Saul Goodman. We may have only seen the decline.
I think the test is going to be, because if you look at the Hermanos character, Gus, and how he drives... And he's clearly a very strong man from the outset. And even in the prequel-y type stuff that he did around the cartel, you could see that he was an extremely strong character. And the current Saul would never be taken in by Gus as he currently stands. So that's an interesting thought, that he has to become someone who's flash and looks like he's in control to get in with Gus, but then ends up ultimately being dominated by Gus, which pulls him back to where he was.
By the way, this puts us in strange new spoiler and territory, because can you talk about Better Call Saul without talking about the previous history of Breaking Bad? One of the other things we talked about last week was the possibility of what if the story of Better Call Saul actually goes into new future territory, because we're treating it like it's a prequel, but wouldn't it be great if 3 or 4 seasons in, we're now into real post- Walter White territory where his past catches up with him and we're watching the entire thing unfold in Omaha, Nebraska or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about whether I was assuming that first black and white looking intro was it. Like we would never go back there. But that would be actually unlike Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Vince Gilligan, right? He loves to play with timelines. He loves to show you something floating in a pool at the beginning of a season and then, you know, just kind of tug at it all season long until you finally figure it out at the end.
Wouldn't it be so Vince Gilligan to sell a lie to the entire world that we're watching a prequel series that turns out to be a sequel series? I could totally see this happening.
In other words, most of what we've seen so far is just flashbacks.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I could see somewhere like near the end of I could see the end of this first season, the last couple of, because this is what's been problematic for me is, you know, Bob Odenkirk is what, like 52 or something? And he's playing this, you know, plucky up and coming 30 something lawyer. And I've wondered how long he's able to do that. But if this is a transition thing, if all of this has been a fantastic con job, which I wouldn't put it past Vince Gilligan to do, then all of a sudden it makes it so much easier to take us into new places.
All right. I think that wraps us up for Better Call Saul this week. Ewan, do you want to hang around and be spoiled on things you haven't seen?
Yeah, or do
you need to head out?
No, I'll stay.
All right. Good. We are going to talk about The Shield. I know you're in season 2 of The Shield, right, Ewan?
Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying Dutch's character quite a lot at the moment. He's gone from that being a bit pathetic into being a little bit stronger, a bit more insightful. And Acevedo's still dealing with an awful lot of tussle with what's his face from the squad, but
Vic Mackey.
Yeah, with Mackie, but it's we said just before we started, I've kind of enjoyed the season one was good, but I think season two is where they've got better writers on, and I find myself getting wrapped up in the plots more now in season two.
Brian, I need some ethical guidance here after what he just said, because season four, episode 11, A Thousand Deaths, deals with Captain Rawlings, Ewan, not Captain Aceveda, and also deals with a very important development in Wagenbach's character.
I don't think
spoiler away. It's fine.
All right, yeah. All right. As long as you're sure.
Listen to the show most weeks, so I still get you talking about the other stuff anyway. So it's not a big deal.
This is the one where Shane is starting to act like good Shane again, right? He's come back into the fold. He wants to play the game the way Vic wants it played. They're going to take a lie detector, and everybody knows they're taking the lie detector for show, so that they can tell the populace, we put those guys through a lie detector, right? And so they've got the guy from who used to be Army Intelligence, who's a locksmith, to kind of help him have some tips on passing the lie detector. I'm like, guys, if you just wait long enough hacking the system, I'll help you out, I'm sure. But, you know, they can't do that. So Shane's all in, and Army is not. In fact, he's not only having a crisis of conscience all the way through, but he, in the end, denies. He's like, I will not take the lie detector, basically screwing Captain Rawlings' strategy on this in preventing the idea of the whitewashing the cops. Not whitewashing in a bad way, but like giving the public image of like it wasn't the cops, because it's really complicated in Farmington. No one likes the seizures. Everyone thinks that the cops actually may have staged the shooting of their fellow cops. And that this is part of a way, you know, to somehow deceive the populace. There's no trust anywhere. And then we find out hard evidence that, in fact, the two policemen were not killed by Antoine, even though Antoine at the end of the previous episode said pretty much he did it to Vic, that they were killed by Russians who hired, I want to say they were Nigerians, to kill the cops because they had got pulled over for a traffic violation and were feeling harassed. So the Russian mob doesn't take too well to that and causes, puts a hit out on these two cops. That's a pretty far-fetched story, but at the same time, the evidence seems fairly solid on this. The Nigerian definitely was hired by the Russians. The Russians were trying to kill the Nigerian's family or hold them hostage, etc. But everybody believes there's still something to what Antoine was involved, and Vic wants to prove it. Now Captain Rawlings' strategy is undermined. And at the same time, Wagenbach is undermined because Vic's ex-wife decides to tell Vic that she's going to date Wagenbach. And Wagenbach sort of implied that they didn't really know each other. And of course, Vic reacts very negatively because he hates Wagenbach. And now that fight has been restoked. And Vic's ex-wife pretty much kicked Wagenbach out of the kitchen.
Yeah. Okay, so at this point, you are two episodes away from wrapping up what, at the time, was considered the most reviled season of The Shield. Although, to be honest, like, I'm really glad to read these articles about, the Onion AV Club going back and revisiting it and speaking kindly about it, phrasing it as more of a chess match than the previous episodes. Are you excited about turning this corner and hitting the home stretch?
This is a hard one for me to sum up because so much is going on. And one of the interesting things was after the last episode, when they sort of wrapped up the Antoine issue, I realized that they only had a couple episodes left in the season, and was the finding out how Antoine had the policeman killed, Scooby and the other one, is that going to be enough to carry us through? And this episode proved to me, in fact, the whole Antoine plot scenario was merely a ruse to set up this more complicated network involving the Russian mafia and Africans, right? We're not talking about your Farmington African Americans anymore. We're talking about actual immigrants, which lends a whole nother international aspect to everything. And the characters are even bewildered at this point. Like, how many different subgroups are involved? We've got Salvadorans now, and we've got a Nigerian, and we've got the Russians. So it's a crazy episode. And knowing that Glenn Close leaves makes me sad at this point, because I think
she's
Rawlings is an amazing character, and she plays it so well.
Yes, although I'm sure you are aware, I believe it's season 5, not season 6, that Forrest Whitaker joins. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yeah, you've spoiled me on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was all over the news at the time, you know. So it's like there was no way to escape it.
I don't think it doesn't really change my perception of the show, though.
Man, do yourself a favor. Don't read any of the synopses going forward because I never do.
I go into each episode totally cold, other than what you tell me.
Okay, good. Don't listen to me even. let's move forward real quick. Let's go into Marco Polo.
Yeah. Okay. Before you tell me your reaction to Marco Polo, which you intimated a little bit before the show, I don't remember how it ends.
I mean, how it ends is the...
I know Kubla wins, right? I remember the scene of him sitting on the Han throne, right?
Well, which, by the way, it's rough for me. No, the Song Dynasty.
Thank you.
You have to say it the way they did. It's weird to... do you notice that the set for the Song Dynasty is exactly the set for the Kubla Khan? It's like how every ship in all of the Star Trek universe has the exact same curved structure on the bridge.
General configuring, yeah. I didn't notice that because I really wasn't looking at the screen all the time.
Okay. Let me say this. Why can you be Marco Polo is the uncanny valley of good production. If you glance at it, you're like, that looks like a well-produced, well-executed show. And you're right in that there are beautiful pictures when you're not catching the cameras leaning into frame. But the story is nonsense. Like, if you have it, you have 10 episodes to set up that maybe Marco Polo has some kind of unique inventing vision or picked up a perfect trebuchet design at some other point. You could do something besides on the 10th episode, shrug your shoulders and say, oh yeah, by the way, Marco Polo knows a superior design for the trebuchet that's going to allow Kubla Khan to defeat the Song Dynasty. You don't get to do that. Or you don't have to do that, at least. I don't understand. Here's the weird part, is when it ended, I was kind of like, oh, I guess that's it for Kubla. I wanted more Kubla. Like, why did they call this Marco Polo? Shame on you. Shame
why
on you for shoehorning a Westerner.
I want there to be less Marco Polo. Again, not because of the actor. I think he's fine.
He's great.
I think all the actors are really good. I just want the story to be different. And now I remember, I had to look it up. Now I remember how it ends, because it ends with a cliffhanger of Ahmad talking to
Mei-Lin,
and she has somehow decided it was a good idea to have a mural commissioned of Kubla being beheaded.
Yes, exactly.
You know he dies in the end, right?
Yeah, they all die in the end, right?
Spoiler alert. I want to prevent a criticism from being leveled at me, which is, hey, Tom, if you didn't pay attention to the episode to begin with, you shouldn't criticize it. I will say yes, absolutely. I am not going to say episode 10 was bad because I really wasn't paying close attention to it. But I think that that says something about my own enthusiasm for the series, that I just kept drifting off and doing other things and then realizing, oh, wait a minute, I should be paying attention.
Can I tell you something weird? This is the unattractive girl that I made out with at the party while I was drunk. And five out of 10 would make out again is my review. It's like when season 2 comes out, I'll probably watch it, but it's like I'll feel guilty about myself. I was like, I shouldn't have done that. Now she thinks I'm into her.
You know what it is for me? Bud Light. It's like, yeah. You know, I just have so many positive associations with Bud Light. I like the look of the can. And it, you know, and there's a certain feeling I get when I'm like, I have a Bud Light, but then I never feel good after I drink it.
Yeah. And it's so close. Like there's parts of Bud Light that's really great. Like the part where you get drunk. That's a great part, right? But unfortunately, right. You have the taste and everything else that goes into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I, I'm sorry, folks. I know there's people who love Marco Polo and they thought it finished great. And I am happy that you enjoyed it. And I'm sorry that I can't share in your enthusiasm.
Okay, look, like you pay an artist and you're like, listen, I want a picture. I want you to draw a figure. If I was in grade school and paid someone $5 to draw a stick figure of me with a teacher's head cut off, you're telling me I'd get away with that in grade school? You're telling me somebody had an artistic mural
on a wall? I mean, I get what it's pointing to is like, oh, there's a conspiracy inside Kubla's court. Because if there's going to be a season two and you just beat the cricket chancellor, you've got to have intrigue, right?
Sure.
So that's the right thing to do. But it was a little weird to be like, yeah, so we just painted it right here on the wall where anybody could discover it.
Oh, you discovered my secret plans, did you? A freaking wonky angle, like a Batman villain. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Walking Dead. Which episodes did you watch?
Okay, I watched the last two episodes of before the mid-season break. So I followed everything where, you know, you see Carol waking up in the... one thing I'll say about the last four episodes is that they do a really good job of not carrying you from place to place, of just like joining them in the middle of a new situation. It's a bit like reading short stories. It's like, you know, all these characters, you know, the world at this point, we're not going to hold your hand. If they're not in Atlanta, it's because presumably they got out of Atlanta safely and now they're on the way to this other thing. And again, this season continues to do the dance of touching on elements from the comic books that were right around the time that I ran out of time to read them, which, by the way, I'm really looking forward to go back and reading all this stuff because they're talking about going to Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, I had the surprise of is it Beth getting killed? Is that the what's her name's sister?
Well, that's why I was asking which episodes you watched, because I don't know. So you're totally caught up? You watched
100%
this week's episode?
I watched it this morning, this week's episode. Okay. This morning.
So you watched episodes 7 through 10, and yeah, Beth dies in the mid-season finale of episode 8.
Yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal to me that she died. I actually thought it was an interesting... you know what? Let's get caught up. Let's talk about the last two episodes after the break. Really?
That Beth died. But I also saw it coming. The episodes leading up to this, and maybe it's the break you took between watching these and the others. I grew to adore Beth, and I was cheering for her. And it was especially stoked for me in the episode with Daryl, where she and Daryl grow close, but without like, oh, so they're getting together. It was like they grew close on a deeper level than that. And then she's learning her way. She's trying to figure out who she is in that hospital, and she even breaks out. And so to like cut that story off really felt to me like a life actually getting extinguished before it had fulfilled its prime.
Yeah, Reginald the 14th is pointing out in the chat that I didn't watch a bunch of Beth episodes in season 4, and maybe that's why it didn't really
maybe
resonate
that does.
With me. That makes sense. But I will say, let's pick it up from after the mid-season break. So... I thought as an arc, the hospital and those cops, you know, with the white knuckle, let's keep order happening, and the way that all ended, where it's like, hey man, if you want to come, you can come, you know, you got your tribe, we got ours, and off they went. I thought was good. Coming back from the break spending a whole episode really just to say Tyrese dies. And to I don't know, have this parade of past characters coming back for their I don't know, their crazy acid trip, you know, remembrances. None of that really resonated with me, especially because again, you know, I didn't watch a bunch of Tyrese episodes to warm me up, but at this point, they made it clear that everyone can die at any time. So there's some part of me that's steeled for this kind of thing. I was surprised that they just full on killed him after they cut off his arm. You're like, oh, he's going to be, you know, in this new, oh, nope. They're throwing dirt on his face, you know?
Well, I was surprised by that too, but I liked being surprised by that because it was again saying, look, just cutting off an arm doesn't save people. Like we're going to make this universe where like, sometimes you can, you just can't save people.
Can I tell you, weirdly, my favorite episode of the bunch was last night's episode, where
mine too,
literally nothing happened. Nothing interesting happened. It was about the minutia and about the grieving process and about the horror, the horribly boring horror of this world. Like,
the enemies. I think I read this on Io9, might have been The Verge, but I totally agreed with this. The enemies were thirst.
Yep.
And depression.
Yep. It was great.
And they were more deadly enemies than any enemy we've seen in this entire series.
Yes. Well, and plus also it I suspect serves an important thing. Here's something The Walking Dead has not been great about is giving us engaging stories that don't rely on a big punch. There was no big punch. And because we almost had this breathing room, it wasn't we're finally safe, or there's running water here, or look, it's a utopia fake out or whatever. But it was that quiet, boring, horrific minutia of, like, this is what it is to live in this world, and for the moment we're still alive, and we hear snippets on the radio of something's happening up in DC. Clearly somebody's still alive. We don't know. We're busy trying to get drinking water. We're so depressed we can't be bothered to poke one of these walkers in the brain. I loved it. I thought it was the best of all of them, and I loved it specifically because it makes me feel like it's setting up for something good again.
Well, this made you feel, and this is a very difficult thing to do, this made you feel like you were walking from Atlanta to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And all the stuff you're saying, Brian, if you haven't seen the episode, would make you think it's a really awful episode, because most people would not be able to pull this off, I don't think.
I'll tell you what, it's actually one of the best acted episodes too, because, like, there's entire 15-second chunks where you're looking at nothing but Norman Reedus with a thousand-yard stare.
That's Marco Polo.
Wait,
100 eyes.
And it's also 100 eyes. Let's not blow this up. I don't want to Brian Williams this. But
listen, Brian, when I was marching from Atlanta to Washington, D.C. yesterday.
It's like the actors are really good, and there's these little attentions to detail that I really like. At some point, you're looking at Norman Reedus, and Daryl puts his hand up or whatever, and you just see, like, all of a sudden it hits me, like, every day he goes into work, he has to have black grime put under all of his fingernails for those scenes. And it's like, I don't know. It's that attention to detail that makes me believe the universe.
A couple of things that I had reactions to, I think, illustrate to me how captivating this was. Well, first of all, usually about halfway through almost any episode of any television show, I'm checking progress.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to see, like, how many? Oh, we got like 20 minutes left. Okay. Like, it's not because I'm bored. It's because I'm curious, like, where we are in the setup of things. I did not do that with this episode. This episode was, I was just locked in, hilariously, with, not like you say, no big events happening, no action happening. Although a lot was happening, it just wasn't what you normally think of as like action or event-driven behavior. And little things were starting to bug me, like me, fully hydrated, having eaten dinner, sitting on my couch, and going, dude, there's a plastic bag in that car right there. Take that plastic bag and tie it to the trees. And then during the day, you'll get some evaporation out of that, and you'll get a little bit of water. You guys desperately need water. And of course, it is the thing that those people are not going to think of.
Yeah. You know why? Because apparently The Walking Dead happened before 2015, the release of this season of Hacking the System.
Well, that, right. Absolutely. But also, like, unless they're trained survival people, they're not going to creatively come up with solutions. They're not even going to remember half remembered stuff. They're too beaten down for that. And so when Daryl sits down and he sees the barn, I'm like, freaking barn, man, there's a shed. You got, like, and he's just looking at it like, yeah, that's not going to help us. It's just, and of course that is the one piece that ends up circling back around, and saving the day. A little weird that, you know, you have this zombie invasion that is taken care of by the trees and the wind, but Chalk that up to random behavior. It's fine.
Yeah. The fixer wants to know what we thought of Rick's "We Are the Walking Dead" speech. I suspect it would have been more impactful for me if I hadn't already read it in the comic book. And in the comic book, it's one of those patented Rick blow up moments where he's, you know, screaming at everyone all around saying, "Don't you get it? We are the Walking Dead." And, you know, it's like, if I hadn't seen that, it might have been, you know, like, oh, snuck up on me. But on the other hand, part of me thinks that's a whole, like, wah, wah, we are the Walking Dead.
So what did you think of the ending when Jimmy McSunshine shows up?
Oh, dude, it's great, especially because if it goes into the arc that I think it will, warning here on the spoiler in time, I'm about to spoil
something we didn't tell you we were going to spoil. Correct. If you came in for being Walking Dead TV spoiled, this might spoil comic book a little.
I think they're going to go into the kind of the 1960s Haven suburbia phase, which I think it'd be great. Like just because it would make sense, because everybody is so dead inside right now. They're so hammered. They're so beaten and broken by this world that to throw them into not a military dictatorship, not into a false, you know, whatever, but into a genuinely nicely run, however slightly gossipy.
There's something else going on. Gossipy. I think you leave it at that and not anger too many people.
Well, no, but that was what was great about this arc, is that all of a sudden their chief concern was what the neighbors were talking about them. You know, it's to put them in a gossipy environment.
Well, but you haven't read past that.
What's that?
You haven't read past that, have you?
No. Man, I guess I stopped reading right around the time. There was a lot of, full on spoilers coming. I got to the part where they're all like, no guns, but they keep their guns. They're like, you kept your guns. And then there was some blow up. And then at some point, like, Rick shot the leader of the group. And then, and then they're like,
there's much more to come.
Okay.
That explains why they are acting the way they act.
Well, then I'll hold off and I'll wait. I'm very excited.
Yeah. No, I actually I've really enjoyed the comic book. Reginald 14 disagrees. He thinks the comic book crap, but I really enjoy the comic book, and I think it's better than ever right now. But it's also diverged quite a bit. Even though they're generally following the same path, it's a different road.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man.
All right.
I'm excited by this because I have enjoyed the past season and a half of Walking Dead, and this episode elevated it once again to where I'm like, this is how I felt for the first time. This is how I felt when I watched the first few episodes.
Absolutely. Agreed. Also, there's a little show with some guy who gives you tips from the internet about how to get ahead in life called Hacking the System. New episode tonight at 10, 9 central.
So tip your waitress.
Yeah.
Send a note to the chef.
I definitely watch those. We'll be doing another live watch party. I should call Jason and see if he wants to come over. He'll probably Skype in, though, I think.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching. You and Rankin, you still around? Sorry, man. We've just been spoiling away here.
No. I've listened with great interest.
Okay. Very good. Check out BritishTechNetwork.com as well. Check out Ewan on the Full Cord Killers show if you haven't watched that for some reason. And we will see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.